Okay, everybody, welcome back to the Concert Honesty Podcast. This is episode number 86 with my guest, Victor Cacchese. Victor is one of the founding members of Sandbox Percussion. He was also a student of ours at the So Percussion Summer Institute, and he was a student in some master classes at the Peabody Conservatory years ago when So came through to do some classes. So Victor's a good guy, and just wanted to check in with him and see how he's doing. Again, please don't hold us to anything outside of these 2 weeks. We're all just talking, trying to figure out what's going on. So I hope you all are doing well, and I hope you're staying sane during these this quarantine. So enjoy this conversation with Victor Cacchese. We will talk to you all soon. Take care. Stay safe. Bye.
Thank you. All
right. Well, I'm not Brazilian. I'm Welsh-Irish. All right. We are rolling here. Victor Cacchese.
Okay.
Am I saying your name? How do you say your name?
That was right. Cacchese. Yeah.
And is it, I joke about you being Brazilian. You're Brazilian?
Well, so, Cacchese is actually an Italian last name.
Right.
My dad and my grandpa were born in Brazil. Mm-hmm. So I have some family that lived there for a number of years. But I think technically, the whole family is very Italian, actually. Kind of came from Italy and Spain, I think, kind of that area.
Okay, so when you go to like family gatherings, when you go to family gatherings, do you you wrap yourself in the Italian flag or the Brazilian flag?
It depends on which side. my mom's side is their last name is Pagano.
Okay.
So they're very, very Italian, and they really identify with being Italian. Like they live in South Jersey, and they immigrated from Italy, mm-hmm. Actually from Sicily. So that side of the family feels very Italian. But I think because my dad and his family lived in Brazil for years, I think that they feel a closer connection to there, you know?
Got it. Well, we don't have to talk about your... Well, I we do for one more second. I'm just saying, I'm saying is I think maybe for your family, you might want to hang an Italian flag in your studio. I see that green Brazilian flag in there all the time, but I don't see any of.
I know. Actually, the other guys are kind of like, they sort of are like, we're not Brazilians, so I don't know why that's there.
Well, tell them to put their flags up of whatever national heritage align with.
I have told them that, yeah.
Well, hey, buddy. I appreciate you taking the time to chat today. The series of podcasts I'm sort of loosely calling the Corona Cast series, so that we sort of wall them off as these. They're sort of snapshots in time. Not that I don't care about who you are as a artist and a musician, and we can definitely do more podcasts about that later. But these are very unique times, and I'm just curious from your standpoint, what are your, well, first of all, what do you want to, is there anything in particular you want to talk about? My question to you, maybe to get it started, is what has been your experience thus far, and what have you been thinking about, given that we're all sort of in this very unique point in history together?
Yeah, totally. I'm constantly just so surprised at how fast it has all kind of happened, you know, and how quickly it's changing each day.
Yeah.
I think that I think just yesterday I was remembering when we first were kind of hearing about this all happening, you know, kind of, I guess, late January, maybe early February, you were hearing about it happening around the world. And I was just kind of thinking like, that's such a bummer that that's happening all these places. Like we should really like reach out to those people, keep those people in our thoughts. But you know, we're going to be fine here.
Right.
And then for this all to just kind of happen here as well and happen all over the world, I think that it has kind of humbled me a little bit because I have never really realized how vulnerable we are, you know? And especially, you know, when you're busy and living in a place like New York City, you can kind of get a little bit, you can kind of forget, I think, what's happening around you. And you can think that you're kind of just in your own little bubble, but it's definitely not true, you know?
Yeah.
So this has all kind of made me realize that it really is quite humanizing, you know?
Well, it's interesting. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I've had a completely rational view of all of the proceedings around coronavirus and our reactions to it as a human being. I'm sure I don't want to speak for you, but, I'll only speak for myself. I've had some pretty embarrassing moments where I'm like pretty selfish, or I'm, you know, pouring a rum and coke at 9 o'clock in the morning being like, screw it all. You know, like that's not, you know, of course I'm not going to live my whole life like that all the time, but, my wife is questioning me in the background right now. It's interesting to me. I've been thinking a lot about things like climate change, like school shootings, like things that are, we have a lot of arguments about that we all say are these shared, like, we're all in it together. We're all in climate together. We're all like, you know, your son or daughter could be at a school where there's a mass shooter or whatever. But it's hard for human beings to process things that are in the future that, like, you don't see that might happen, like school shootings. Like, why would I buy my kid a backpack that's bulletproof? Like, the statistical probabilities of your kid being a victim at a school where there's a mass shooter, not to minimize the people who have actually had to deal with that, but in reality, it's a very small, infinitesimal small amount percentage that you might actually have to deal with this in your life. Climate change, we're all dealing with it, but not in ways that you could, like, it's not like right now climate is making us all huddle inside. Maybe the climate change thing is what's caused COVID to sort of emerge into the world right now. We don't know, but I'm curious how we all view things like these shared spaces, shared sacrifice, shared, you know, those arguments around socialism. Do we put tax dollars towards certain things or not? You know? I don't know. I'm not saying these are just things I'm thinking about. I don't know what the answer is. And the reason I sort of wall these podcasts off is like, I think this is time for us all just to say things out loud and then immediately regret them and then not hold anybody to them and just be like, I don't know. What if we tried this? What if we tried this? I don't know. Why is this thing happening? So from your standpoint, like, what has been on your mind past? I want to get to how it's affected Sandbox and what you all are dealing with just as artists, because I think that's something that you can uniquely speak to. But has your mind been dwelling on anything in particular with this downtime?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I think it's really interesting kind of when it happened with, you know, with the Democratic primary and everything and how that was that was kind of the thing for everybody to kind of rally around and discuss, you know?
Right.
And how that has been something that is sort of basically in my mind has been a preparation for this epic battle that's coming, you know? And that's a battle where, you know, one side is sort of already clearly defined. And the other side is just kind of like rallying their troops. And I think that all of a sudden we were like hit with this virus. And, now we're all kind of rallying around like this common purpose or this common enemy that we all really want to beat. It doesn't matter who we are or, you know, what our political preferences, you know, what our race is, religion, whatever, you know, I think everyone can pretty much agree that this is like pretty terrible. And I think that is, in my mind, I've actually been, I'm like maybe foolishly optimistic, but I think if there is a silver lining with it, it is kind of bringing us all together in a weird way where we're able to really like step back and think like, oh my gosh, how is this going to affect us in the future? Is it going to change the way that we interact with each other once things go back to normal? I feel like maybe there is something good that can come of it. And that's really been in my mind a lot recently. I've never really been, to be totally honest, like I've never been such a political person. I actually come from a very conservative family. And I think living in a professional life that I feel it's not really in line with that, you know? That's always been a little bit of a conflict for me.
Yeah, me too.
And to have my just a conflict, and it's made it difficult for me to formulate my own opinions. Mm. And I think over time I've started to kind of find things that resonate with me and certain things that don't resonate with me, regardless of what it might be in terms of right or left. Mm-hmm. And that kind of struggle, that wrestling with that, I think can be pretty exhausting sometimes for me.
Yeah.
And now actually to have this where we're sort of all coming together and sort of trying to rally together and figure out what we can do to lift each other up, how it's going to affect the future. Mm-hmm. For me, actually, that's kind of a silver lining, I think.
Well, it's interesting to me because as you were talking, I feel like there were parts of my brain that were like lighting up things when I first went to Yale, I had lived in the Midwest my whole life. You know, I grew up in a very conservative mm-hmm. household. Let me take that back. I would say conservative on some things, voted Republican. I would say if I had to guess, my parents were very conservative in terms of their voting record. But in terms of the things that were talked about around my house, like how we treat people, how the rights that, you know, at least when I was growing up, it was like gay rights. Like what, my parents had a kind of complicated view on it, but the lesson I took was one of like, you take care of people. If they're mm-hmm. nice to you, you be nice to them. Doesn't matter whether they're gay, whether they're straight, whether they're black, brown, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But when I got to Yale, it was clear that there were some things that's like, oh wow, you all don't see the world that way. Like you, mm-hmm. there are other criteria by which you're deciding whether or not someone's important. Or should yeah. be listened to, or should be supported, or lifted up, or not, or whatever. For you, what has been some of the like? I'm interested. I've navigated it in a way that I felt good, but it has been very stressful at times to hear, especially after the election in 2016, where everybody was not everybody, yeah. but a lot of folks on the left were talking about people from where I grew up as if they were these rubes, mm-hmm. you know, these apes that were walking around on their knuckles all day, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's frustrating Trump got elected, but you're just painting with a very broad brush and you're not even painting that well, you know? So for you, like what has been some of the struggles that you felt just, and I'm not asking you to sort of complain about anybody in particular, but for you, what has been some of the things that just as a person in the arts, mm-hmm. You've been struggling with on that front?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think I'm kind of an impressionable person. So when I'm working and I'm in the arts and I'm around my colleagues, it's very easy for me to feel one thing and for something to really resonate with me. But then when I go back home, if I spend like a large chunk of time at home, mm-hmm. It's different, not because my family's political preference is necessarily different, mm-hmm. but just the kind of ecosystem that is around that area. So I grew up in Delaware. Mm-hmm. It's not very far away, but it is a little bit of that general area, Delaware and South and Maryland as well. The kind of general vibe there is it's very different from New York, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when I find myself in these different physical locations, those are the moments when I feel the most stress about sticking to my guns, you know, or formulating my own opinions. Mm. I think that part of the thing that people have had a hard time understanding with people bare knuckles, walking on bare knuckles, mm-hmm. Is those folks to me, it's my understanding that they've never really felt like they've had somebody to represent them. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. Like, so my family spends some time in Ocean City, Maryland, mm-hmm. Over the summer. And that entire place has been completely, founded basically on a fishing culture. Mm. Kind of an ocean saltwater fishing culture, and the general political idea is if you are a fisherman, you have a big Trump flag that you're going to fly on your boat and or on your car or mm-hmm. outside your house or something like that. And it's always been it actually feels more like somebody's flying like a nationality flag and not like a political flag. Mm-hmm. People feel I feel like people have this feeling like they are like they're proud of this. You know, they're proud that this is like somebody who represents them and represents the lifestyle that they live.
Yeah.
I wonder if they, I don't know, I should maybe sit down and talk to somebody, but I wonder if they're actually thinking that that is more of a, more of a like a prideful thing, a nationality thing, than actual a beliefs, like actually like a political belief. Like, I wonder if there's so many political issues that are actually different from what so many people maybe in New York think, or some other kind of more urban environments. So I think just like having that person to represent them and to represent the life that they live and like what they believe in, is kind of what they were looking for. And for me, that feels nice. I feel bad that for them, that they feel like there's not a candidate that is, you know, that can make everybody happy, that also really represents the life that they live. I wish there was, but I don't know. So that, I think that's something that I deal with is those two physical locations.
Yeah. I mean, in my experience, it's not all anecdotal, but for me, the moments of those friction where I've wondered like, oh my God, is the person I've known my whole life, or the friend that I see flying the Trump flag or posting things on Facebook, like, are they actually racists? Like my whole life, is this really, are they bigots? Are they do they hate women? Like, cause we jump very quickly to ascribing the way we see Trump acting, and the labels we put on him, and then that trickles down. If you're with him, then you must be these other things too. My theory is that I think folks, there's been a lot of talk around like what the PC culture is. Like there's, you know, been television shows called Politically Incorrect as a like pushback against this idea that we should be horrified by words alone and we're going to police the way people talk. It's a very complicated argument. I'm in a class of people that, by and large, doesn't have many words thrown at them in harmful ways.
Yeah.
But on the other hand,
right
or wrong, whether or not you agree with somebody's actions, if the reason they're voting for the thing that you abhor the most is only because they're just tired of being called a racist or a bigot at every drop of the hat, every time there's an off-color joke or every time there's a Facebook meme that's posted, like you are now in the same camp as Adolf Hitler and, you know, Mussolini. Like there's no middle ground. We don't have first and second degree political incorrectness. It's like you are Jeffrey Dahmer or you're not, you know?
Yeah.
I do think that over time that has to bear fruit somewhere. Like that, the chickens on that approach to life are going to come home to roost somewhere. And my theory is that it's come home to roost with Donald Trump. You know, enough people, human beings want to survive, want to be able to go to the grocery store, want to walk around in their day, have a thought that maybe they're not fully believing in, that they just want to put out in the world to see if it holds any water. And then if immediately they're shot down or called a certain thing or whatever, then people just are going to stop thinking. People are going to stop questioning things.
Yeah.
People are going to, and it's like, I think that's a fundamentally dangerous place to be as a society. Now, do I think that we should be able to walk around the world saying the N word? No, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
There's a reasonable, you have to sort of, again, it's like you have to make some judgment calls, but by my judgment, I feel like a lot of people are voting for the other side because they finally are just like, you know what? If you're going to call me this thing anyway, I may as well, you know, vote for this other guy.
Right.
And I think that's a really powerful tool. I've had arguments with my mom about feeling like she feels like my class of people. And first I have to stop her and be like, what do you mean my class of people, mom? Like I'm your son. Like, like you, I was inside you for 9 months. Like I am literally your class of people.
Yeah.
I can't be any more your class of person than I am. But it's a really tricky, it's a tricky thing. And I think leading into like the thing that coronavirus unfortunately is showing us all is that like, we do. Healthcare is important. Do I think it means that everybody should get it for free? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I barely know what I should tell some student at SOCI to do with their cue that they have to give coming up. Like I'm throwing stuff at the wall there, and that's stuff I really know a lot about. Like I really feel like I'm I wouldn't say an expert, but I know enough that if you had a chamber music emergency and you called me and I could come to your house, I could fix it pretty quickly.
Yeah, right.
So no, I don't know about what happens to the healthcare system if you make Medicare for all. I have my belief systems, but this arrogance around like what, oh, well, look how clear things are. No. Things are actually less clear now to me, which means that we should be not making, maybe taking ideologically cemented positions on everything. I mean, I don't know, somebody on the right who's like, no, like pull yourself up by your bootstraps and you should get the best health care that you can afford. It's like, okay, well.
Yeah.
How's that working, you know?
I know.
And then if you just put the government in charge of all the healthcare, and then, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the other answer is. Like, you've got people, elective surgeries are being put on the back burner. And for some people, elective means, hey, you've got stage 2 cancer. We're not operating on it until it's stage 4. We just don't have the time. Like, that's a real thing that's happening right now on some level.
And yeah.
So, I don't know. Like,
right.
Those are decisions that have to be made too when your healthcare system's overrun. So,
I don't know. We're hearing about that with that's even happening with coronavirus right now. I think right, they're making choices about who lives and who dies.
Well, that's what I was saying about the cancer thing. Is like the doctors are like, we know that. You know, yes, we would have this surgery for you now if we could, like if things weren't crazy, but we can't have you taking up a hospital bed if we know that this cancer isn't going to kill you right now. Like, because there are other people who are just walking in the door whose lungs are shutting down today.
Right.
I don't know. It's all – well, how – we can pontificate on how this affects the healthcare system, and neither one of us have any idea about how that works. How are you all triaging in the emergency room that is contemporary music right now? And especially not just contemporary music, but contemporary percussion and even nichier slice of the niche pie that it is.
Oh my gosh.
That we all eat every day. So
yeah, totally.
How y'all doing? What's been your discussion? You don't have to go into detail because I have a suspicion everybody's in the same boat. It's just all relative. So the things you're talking about are probably the same things we're talking about, but I'm just curious. How's it going?
Right. Yeah. I mean, things are – the morale is good. We're trying to stay super positive. I think right now – I mean, we've had a bunch of things canceled like most people have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's weird because this is generally – it can be a pretty busy time anyway.
Right.
And to have it all happen now – like we had like one of our biggest concerts canceled. That was a big premiere that we've been working on for years.
Right.
So we, before that was canceled, we were just kind of like, okay, that's going to probably get canceled. Like, let's just get ready for that. Mm-hmm. I think now we're trying to figure out like what we can do, like what our role is going to be in the music world and in the, I guess, the percussion world, which of course is even smaller. But that it's tricky because we're still in like a state where everything is still really changing a lot every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think it was just yesterday, right? That Cuomo said that non-essential workers should just stay home or they're, it's basically a shelter in place for any non-essential workers.
So you guys were like, Ian Rosenbaum, time to stay home, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Pretty much.
The rest of us are coming into work, but baby, stay home.
I know. Yeah, I don't know what classified as non-essential.
I think I might be a non-essential worker. They're like, no, we can practice pieces of wood without the rock part. We'll be fine. Like,
without the rock,
I'm going to stay home.
It might depend on the piece. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, so we were thinking like we had these plans for. I mean, you know, if you go anywhere near social media, it's basically just live stream. You know, you can live stream everything, and I think people are really jumping on that, which is awesome. You know, I think that's really cool, and we also have had some plans for, you know, some different things that we're going to do with some live streaming in the next literally few days. But that is, you know, now we're not really so sure. Depending, like. We want to do our part too, like to not spread. I mean, I know we're only 4 people, you know, and my studio is literally right down the street, so I can just walk there. But, you know, I think we also want to be conscious and we want to do our part, and we don't want to, if we're, you know, if we're able to be in a position where we're doing our part, maybe other people will, you know, if one person sees that and they're like, okay, I should really do my part too, then everyone will maybe. So I don't know. We're sort of trying to figure out what we're going to do now, in the next week or so with these live streamed ideas. We're going to maybe give it a day or so to figure it out. But yeah, I think right now we're just trying to figure out what our role is in kind of the music world and what we're going to do. Like, if we're going to pump out digital content, if we're going to take some time just like apart and just sort of reflect, you know, there's a lot of things to consider, obviously, you know, artistically, financially, everything. But
yeah, I mean, there's a real interesting, I feel like I don't want to call it an ethical argument or quandary that I'm having, mm-hmm. of the, you know, I think the instinct I was sort of, I wanted to bring up earlier. There's this, do you know this comedian, Chris D'Elia?
No, I don't think so.
I'm super into comedy. My wife and I love, we watch stand-up specials all the time. And Chris, he's a comedian from LA. He's hilarious. But okay. He I'll send you this clip when we're done, but he spent like 4 minutes talking about how Italians are proving that they are the most Italian of all people in the world by showing how they're handling the coronavirus. And like, they're doing the most Italian thing ever, which is to react. It's either the worst or the best. Right. That's like, Italians don't have a sort of like, whatever, you know, it's like,
yeah.
It's either everything's the worst, everything's the best. And he talks about this coronavirus thing and he's just like, why are people singing in the streets? And he's like, ah, the coronavirus is here. And he goes, open the window. He's like, and he starts like singing out the window. And he's like, get me my trumpet. I must give the people my gift. You know, so there's this moment of like people. It's hilarious the way he does it.
That's
but it's
great.
Like, so there's the one reaction, which is to sing in the streets. And is that helpful? I don't think it's I don't think it hurts. But as an artist, you spend your whole life when things are normal trying to convince people they should pay you for what it is you do. Mm-hmm. We have one crisis and now every artist is like, here it is for free. And and I don't want to judge anybody for that. Truly, I don't want to judge anybody for that. But my personal feeling is like, I don't want to hoard my art, but I also feel like the thing I'm going to give you is like the thing that I don't make any money from and is free anyway, which is the podcast stuff. So I'll talk. And the thing I feel like, I don't feel like everybody's online being like, we have nothing to watch. It's like, no, YouTube's there. There's a lot of stuff to watch. No one is lacking for content right now. Mm-hmm. What people are lacking is the ability to talk to human beings face to face, other than those of you that are the folks who are in your home. Like, what are you all feeling? What do you think is the best way to help right now? And knowing full well that this could change and will change in a week. In a week, somebody may be like, every percussion quartet needs to be sewing diapers for small children. And if you're not, you're not helping the war cause, you know, like, who knows where this is going in a week.
Right.
But right now, where do you feel like you can best, you personally, Victor Cacciese, can help?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like we all have right now, I think we all just have a bunch of time, you know, it's something that we never feel like we have enough of. And for like the first time, we all have like all this time. We have all the time that we need, you know?
Right.
And I've always been really wanting to do more stuff with creating video content for whether it be like educational video content or just like behind the scenes stuff for rehearsal process and all those sorts of things. Just kind of creating a platform for which we can share more stuff like that. It's like been something that like we've kind of like pushed out a little bit at a time. Like whenever there's a moment or, you know, a free week or two, we're able to like pump out some content that is along those lines. But it's never really been something that we can really focus on, you know, but now I think it is. And even if it's something that you can like make over the weekend by yourself in the studio, or even in your apartment or something like that, maybe for me now is the time to really try to do that. And to really try to to create more of a, like, you know, for instance, your podcast, like, I love that now we're able to, like, now is a great time. I mean, you've already been doing it for a while now, but now the podcast and these conversations are, it's so important and it's so much in line with what we should be doing, you know, sitting home and like making stuff and like talking over FaceTime, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I want to, so, I want to say that I feel like one of the things, I mean, right now the pressure I feel, like the insecurity I feel right now seeing everybody online is like, look, artists, it's now you have time. And I'm like, oh my God, like in my experience, that's not the way that great art, like the stuff that I'm the most proud of in So or in my own personal life was stuff that was made where I held a gun to my head and was like, no, you got 5 minutes. You do not have all the time in the world. Go. And that has been the stuff that, at least for so, yes, there's a few things where we've had, you know, 3 or 4 years to spin out ideas, like Where We Live or the gun show or Imagination. Yeah, of course. You guys have the same thing.
Right.
But those things came together not because we had 3 years of just sitting in recliners being like, what should we talk about? What should we play?
Yeah.
It was like, you know, you work and you work and you work, and then there's 30 seconds where there's a gun held to your head and you have a great 30 seconds, and then you're like, we're going to keep that. And then another 2 weeks goes by before you even think about the next 30 seconds, you know? And then you build that up over 3 years. I feel like I want to encourage people right now just to be like, I don't know, maybe the thing that people want to see is process. Maybe they just want to see Third Coast, or not, Third Coast. They want to see Soap Percussion. They want to see Sandbox. Just like put a camera up and rehearse. Don't feel like you have to create anything. Just one of the things that I think people get, like to me, when people are like, artist, time to create, it's like, oh, that's a symptom that you don't actually know what this is like. You have no idea what it's like to make art. And that's okay. I'm not saying people aren't bad people because they don't know. It's like, all right, fine. You want to you want to see what it's like to make something? Here you go.
Yeah.
And then just put up like 5 hours of GoPro footage of Sandbox just staring at each other, not having any clue what the next answer is, trying something, and then everybody being like, wait, Sandbox can sound that bad? What? You know? You know, I think, like, I think a lot of people, A, would, might actually respect
every business meeting we have.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sandbox might be, people might respect not just the arts, but you all more, be like, oh man, I had no idea how much of this was just like taking a single nail and driving it into a board and then driving another nail into a board. And then you step back and you're like, oh my God, I'm building a, like a massive hotel right now. And I'm only like three nails in. like that feeling is is something that people don't see. So I think even if it's just a rehearsal, like here's what it's like when we're rehearsing, see how boring it is. So the next time that you're seeing somebody playing on the streets and you throw a nickel into their tip jar, like, it all relates in some way. I've played for tips. It sucks. You know, and somebody walks up, somebody's thrown a handful of change into my steel drums before while I've been playing. And it wasn't a like I don't think those, they weren't being, they generally were like, I want to give this person money. Here's money. And then they went on about their day. But, you know, if there was just a next level of respect for art and culture and what it takes to make that stuff, like Jackson Pollock didn't just wake up and throw paint against a canvas. Like he thought, like all of those things are thoughtful. There's, you know, it's a little more messy than some other people's art, but it's not like Jackson Pollock would get up during a, I don't know, maybe he would get up during a quarantine and make a bunch of amazing art. But I feel this weird pressure right now where society is like looking at me being like, we're here now, dance for us.
I know, You know, I was watching yesterday. I was watching this live stream session with, do you know Jacob Collier?
No, I don't.
He's this. He's a musician. He's like this multi talented musician. Plays all these different instruments. He sings, plays piano, plays bass. He kind of creates his own sort of solo live show. I've seen him live a couple times actually, and he has a pretty large YouTube presence. And one of the things that he does every now and then, I think he's trying to do it more now recently for obvious reasons, is just do these live stream sessions. And yesterday he did one where he calls them beat sketches. And basically it's like a 3.5 hour long live stream session where he opens Logic and he just he has like all his mics set up in this room. He's got a bunch of instruments. Mm-hmm. And he's this crazy talented guy. So he can play all these different instruments and he can sing them. Like he's got like ridiculous perfect pitch. And he just like creates these like 1 minute long songs that he's going to post on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And he just live streams the whole thing from start to finish.
That's cool.
And at the end, he basically makes this point, you know, I'm just like throwing paint up against like this blank canvas right now. And whatever comes out is, you know, a product of my conversation with you during this, however long, 3 hour session or so.
Right.
And just my own, you know, like my own personal ideas that come up on the spot.
Yeah.
I think that's such a cool thing to watch. I mean, you know, most of the time what he's doing is pretty darn near perfect because he's just such a freakishly talented guy.
Yeah.
But just to follow his process and to see that sometimes it can be a really kind of like messy thing, you know, it can be a very kind of thrown together process. And to be able to be brought along with that in those dreams. So for me, it's just so fun to watch. I watched it like for the whole time that he streamed it yesterday. And it was super fun to see.
That's cool. I mean, I think my dogs are going nuts right now. They're feeling cooped up from the coronavirus. I think one of the sort of misconception I think people can have of folks like that. Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me?
There you are.
Oh, sorry, buddy. My dogs are going crazy.
No worries.
I think one of the misconceptions people can have when they watch somebody like that, remind me of his name again?
Jacob Collier.
I mean, is that, you know, what he's doing is, that's not the first time he's done it. You know, that's my point about process is like he's done that thing probably thousands of times and then he's just doing it online. So it looks like what he's doing is wizardry or he's like, wow, he's doing that all on the spot. It's like, no, he's making calls based on past mistakes he's made. Mm-hmm. And he knows like, oh, if I do this, it's going to ruin the whole thing. So I'll do this other thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's just really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
He's failed more than you and I have at that particular skill. So, anyway, I don't know. I think it's interesting in terms of content right now. Process might be the thing that's the most interesting thing because if people want to know what it's like to create art now, you got to be patient.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Like it's like looking at all, like are authors being expected to do the same thing right now? Like is everybody being like, authors, where's all the books?
Right.
Now you got time to write, right on
now
the spot.
It's like,
no. That stuff takes years of editing and, you know.
Yeah.
So, and the same goes with pastors. I mean, my wife is a pastor. She writes a new 10-minute long monologue every week to deliver to her audience. You know, that's what the clergy does.
Yeah.
That stuff, I see her writing it. It's not like she gets up Sunday morning and just like poops it out and it's like perfect. It is there. She doesn't go improvise it, you know.
She
has to think about a structure in the same way that maybe Jason Truding thinks about a structure for a piece of music or a blues musician would think about some structure in which to improvise around the chord changes.
Yeah.
Sermons have chord changes, you know, that we just don't call them a B-flat 7 chord. We call it like, you know, the whatever the lesson is from that day is the chord changes in which Stephanie has to improvise. So I don't know. I don't want to give people pause right now necessarily from creating content, but just give pause from what they think they want the purpose of it to be. I see a lot of people just putting stuff out and being like, look what I'm doing. And it's like, well, it's not good. Like, that's just not good. And if this isn't your first time in the circle, people are making judgments really quickly. So if this is your first time to be like, I'm an artist, I'm going to get my name out there, and you're just putting stuff out.
Yeah.
I don't know. Be careful because people have nothing to do but sit at home in their couches and judge right now.
Right. It's true. Right
so,
now. Exactly.
And again, it's like, do you care? I don't know. Like as an artist, should you care? If you don't care what people think of your art, then put it out.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think using this as a time to learn, not just about yourself, but as in terms of what your expectations are as a consumer, like what do you want out of your art? What do you want out of your local movie theater? Like, what are the reasons that, you know, the stuff that has gone away because of this crisis?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm curious. What are your hopes? Before we wrap up, what are your hopes about, like, not having any clue really what's going to come? What do you wish pre-corona that has been the thing that's like, God bless, if humans could just do this one thing, we'd be okay. What do you hope when we squirt out the other end of this, we have fixed about us?
Yeah, totally. I think just kind of coming full circle a little bit, I think that if there's anything that we might learn from this is it's very humanizing. It's a common thing that we all share, that we all are trying to beat. And mm-hmm. I think if there's, some good that can come out of it, if there's, when we're on the other side of it, if we can be like, wow, we are more unified now as a race than we ever were.
Mm.
Like, how is that going to affect the way we interact with people who are different from us going forward? Knowing what we know now, we're actually not all that different,
mm-hmm.
That's like a really easy thing to say and to just be like, oh yeah, I agree with that. But to really kind of live by it, I think is, when we're living day to day and figuring out our own, goals and working on our own problems, it can be really difficult, I think, to keep that in mind, that we're all sort of in this together. This is literally showing us that, and I think that hopefully it will influence us as a race going forward for the better,
And what do you think, what do you recommend to music groups? I mean, you guys, I was texting you the other night about being too small to fail. And I say that I didn't want to, when I went to bed, I felt guilty because I didn't want to diminish where you all are in your career, but it was a very important thing during the 2008 crisis when the financial crisis happened for So that it dawned on me. I was like, oh, no one knows we're here. Like, we got a few donors, there's a few things, but by and large, the world doesn't know we're here. So if the world goes away, we're still here. And there's a weird sort of comfort that can come from that. Like, you guys are maybe a little too smaller to fail than So is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But you're an institution more than you used to be. So what recommendation do you have for groups that are right now being like 2 weeks ago were like, I'm going to do this for a living.
Yeah.
I got a grant. and it's like you feel like you've just slayed the beast and you're doing it. And now all of a sudden this thing comes through and just like sand, it's just, it's all gone.
Yeah.
Like what recommendation do you have for folks who are just, you were in it. You did just start off at some point. So what do you have? What advice do you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have to look at the people around you that believe in you and support you. And whether that be friends that you can lean on, family, whatever it might be, just, patrons, audience members, anyone who really believes in what you do, I think just reaching out to them and asking for advice, that's something that we are doing a lot of right now, just because we are a bit smaller. It's funny, like I think we're in this place in our career right now where we are on the line of sort of like becoming kind of a full-time group, like it's sort of getting closer to that area, though it's not quite there yet. So to have it kind of like this kind of brick wall just sort of appear in front of us is a little bit of a scary thing because we're almost like, oh, what do we do now? Like we had this plan, now we got to change everything. So I think we find ourselves looking around us to the people that really believe in us already, just because of the things that we've already done as a group or the interests that we've already had. And I think that those people have really been very helpful in giving us advice at how to move forward. I mean, we just recently in the past year or so became a nonprofit. We had a board meeting like 3 days ago, I think. Those are just like a handful of people right there, that are people that are in our corner that believe in what we do. And they're going to fight for us and they're going to give us advice and they're going to help us out as best they can. I think to know when you're a little bit younger, to know that it's actually not just you in the complete darkness trying to figure this out all by yourself.
Yeah.
That's a comforting feeling,
Well, I think there's a common misperception that students have that it's like they see groups like Sandbox or Third Coast or So Percussion and they're like, oh, well, like they must be fine. It's like, well, I mean, I don't want to give anybody panic. I don't want to be perceived that I'm panicking, but like no one's fine. Like, we're all screwed to some degree. And my only recommendation for folks right now is just to be patient, and not lose your head right now. A few of the folks that I really believe in and trust, have basically said like, we don't know about. Nobody knows anything about funding, about donor support, because everything's chaotic right now. Donors donate when they have cash that's fluid and money they know they don't need. And
stock market's a mess.
And stock market's a mess. People are freaking out. And it's like, I think the common wisdom right now is just to be like, yeah, I mean, stay safe, be healthy, do all the things, be prepared, try to shore up some things you can shore up. But in terms of the things that you can't control right now, like, just be calm. We'll know. Yeah. There will be serenity with data in the next 2 weeks. We will know more information. Music groups will be, gigs will get rebooked or not. Like right now, this is like nothing. Nobody knows anything. So everybody's, I think to some degree, expectedly so, freaking out. But I feel like in terms of the arts, just keep your head on, keep your mission focused, but don't lose your heads. Yes, some things will go by the wayside. Some projects you had will get delayed or canceled. But, the bigger picture right now is, I mean, there's no other choice, right? Like, we kind of have to figure it out. There's no other. I don't have a. I don't have a plan B. You know,
like, from our living rooms.
So, well, hey, buddy. You take care. Stay healthy and try to stay sane. If you want to check in as we progress the next couple of weeks, I'm curious. These podcasts are sort of rings of a tree, tracking our progress throughout this insane time. So, anything you want to chat about, any ideas, questions, concerns, you just want to chime in and say, absolutely nothing has changed. We're all still screwed 2 weeks later. Thanks for your advice, Josh. Really appreciate it. I'm happy to be here and let you say that. So
cool.
Glad to see that at least you're looking well. Please give my love to everybody else, all your guys, and you know, stay safe, buddy.
Thanks, Josh. You too. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, nice to chat with you, man.
All right, we'll talk later.
Take care. Bye. Okay, enjoy. Hope you're all staying safe, staying healthy, and staying sane. Talk to you soon. Bye.